Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio reporting today that the salary cap in the NFL is expected to be either $182 or $183 million. Now, it was $197 last year, no in-stadium attendance. Well, that's going to drop that number down a little bit. And while the salary cap floor was 175 last week, the NFL and the NFLPA announced that it would be no less than 180. Some people were excited that it might be 185. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, says 182 or 183. So going through the numbers, the Titans' top 51 right now, according to Spotrac, represent $187,348,000. $187,348,000. Then they get $2.3 million in rollover cap. Oh, man. $2.3 million in rollover cap. Could be 14.3, but they had to sign Clowney. Which brings their total under a $182 million salary cap to $1.69 million over the cap. Which means some guys got to go. Some guys got to go. Some guys got to be traded. Some guys got to take a pay cut. Now, I should say, Isaiah Wilson I have on the list, but because we don't know if the Titans voided his guarantees, we don't know what his dead cap number would be or how much releasing Isaiah Wilson, which I think they're probably going to do, how much releasing Isaiah Wilson would save them against the cap. So he is kind of a wild card here. Let's put a little star by Isaiah Wilson's name because right now he's about a $2.5 million cap hit, and if his guarantees are voided and they can just release him, they probably are better off doing that. So I took seven guys. And this is before you sign Corey Davis, before you sign Jonnu Smith, before you sign Jayon Brown, because who knows if you're going to be able to sign those guys. So this is who I'm cutting and who I'm not cutting. And we start with the guys that absolutely have to go.
Number one.
Adam Humphries absolutely has to go. Adam Humphries carries a $9.468 million cap hit, $5 million in dead money. Releasing Adam Humphries gets you to $4.46 million in freed up cap space. That would then put you under the salary cap, albeit by not a lot. Adam Humphries, it made sense. Hey, you've got A.J. Brown. You've got Corey Davis. At a slot receiver, they did. He's just been a hurt too often and hasn't produced enough. Adam Humphries last year, and again, that was a very scary hit in Cincinnati, but 228 receiving yards. That is less than any year of his career. He's not worth $9.4 million, and he's not really worth the five in dead cap, but I can at least save 4.46 there. This one doesn't seem very complicated.
Number two.
Kenny Vaccaro. Now, Kenny Vaccaro is a good player, but he's not good enough. And Kenny Vaccaro comes with a $6.906 million cap hit, $3 million in dead cap money, which means you save $3.906 million. So $3.9, almost $4 million by releasing Kenny Vaccaro. Last year, Amani Hooker went up there and played really, really well in that kind of third safety, little nickel kind of role. I don't know if he'd be as good as Vaccaro. I certainly don't think he'd be as good as Vaccaro, but I got to save the $4 million on Vaccaro. He's not worth $7 million at a non-premium position safety where I'm paying the other guy $14. It just doesn't make any sense. Kenny Vaccaro's got to go.
Number three.
Everybody wants to get rid of Malcolm Butler. Mark Howard talks about Malcolm Butler. Chris Sanders has talked about Malcolm Butler. NFL.com wrote an article about Malcolm Butler. TD today was talking about Malcolm Butler on the Midday Show. Everybody, and I'm not saying TD wants to get rid of Malcolm Butler or anything like that. I'm just saying that that's one that comes up. Malcolm Butler carries a $14.2 million cap number. You release him, there's $4 million in dead money, which means that Malcolm Butler would save you $10.2 million against the cap by releasing him. I am not in the business of releasing the only reliable corner I have. Adoree Jackson, can't count on him. Christian Fulton, Can't count on him. Breon Borders. Desmond King is a free agent. They just don't have anything at that position, and you have to keep Malcolm Butler. Now, again, Butler's scheduled to make 14.2 against the cap. I think you got to try to get Malcolm to take a little bit of a pay cut, because no offense to Malcolm, but if he's released, is there $10 million out there on the free agent market for him? As a 31-year-old corner, clearly past his prime, inconsistent, can't run very well? Probably not. So you sit down with Malcolm Butler and you tell Malcolm, hey, we need you to take a pay cut. The difference is there's no real threat. If I were general manager of the Titans, there's no real threat to Malcolm Butler, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to cut him. Whereas with Jarrell Casey, when they asked him to take a pay cut, we assume last year, he said no. They shipped him to Denver. You can't do that with Malcolm Butler. But to me, everybody's going to want Butler. I understand it. There are definitely, there are cons with Malcolm Butler. He is not a number one corner in that sense. But he's my number one corner, and I don't trust anybody behind him, so I'm getting rid of Malcolm Butler. I'm keeping Malcolm Butler, excuse me.
Number four.
This will be the most controversial cut I will make. I am cutting Ben Jones. And TD was on the midday show earlier today, and he was talking about, hey, Ben Jones is the glue to that offensive line. He means too much. Don't cut Ben Jones. Ben Jones comes with a $7.2 million cap number, but only $1 million in dead cap money. That is a potential out. You could save $6.2 million against the cap by cutting Ben Jones. He is 32 years old. He is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. At 33, and with a little bit of an injury question mark, because Ben does get hurt, he's not exactly Bruce Matthews, I don't believe there's a market for Ben Jones that's worth that kind of money. I think there's going to be a lot of centers on the market. I think there is the possibility of drafting a center with one of your two third-round picks and that guy coming in here. I do not value the center position as much as everybody else does. Maybe it's because as I grew up a Titans fan, they just kept putting a bunch of seventh-round draft picks at that position. Now, we all know, it's well documented, Floyd was a great offensive line general manager, and he had Mike Munchak as the offensive line coach. But one year it was Kevin Long, who I think was a seventh-round pick. Then it was Gennaro DiNapoli. Then it was Justin Hartwig. Whoever it was, they were fine at the center position. Then they signed Kevin Mawai to some big money. I think you can, again, get Ben Jones to take a pay cut, because I don't think anybody's paying Ben Jones $6.2 million this year. But I just saved the 6.2, and I put that money into my second pass rusher that I have to go get. I think I can draft in the third round a guy to play center who can be effective more than a pass rusher. Center is not a premium position. I can't pay premium money for it.
Number five.
Adoree Jackson, I'm cutting. Now, again, he has to be healthy, because if he's not, his fifth-year option is guaranteed for injury. But Adoree Jackson, like Malcolm Butler, is roughly $10.2 million against the cap. Adoree is $10.244. So by getting rid of Adoree Jackson, you're going to have to go get another corner. And there is a caveat with Adoree, which is we, A, don't know if he is still hurt, and we, B, do not know if Adoree Jackson's injury would be something that the Titans would want to release him, the injury he had last year, would want to release him for and not have to pay, or if it's one of those things that, hey, it was a fluky, weird injury. He wasn't totally healed when he came back last year. He's healed now, and he'll be the Adoree of old. But I didn't like what I saw out of Adoree last year. That's all I have to go off of. I know he's young, but he's not even really a truly dynamic playmaking corner. I would love to see what happens with Adoree Jackson when he hits the market. But I'm going to save the 10.2 on Jackson, not the 10.2 on Butler. But I am going to save the 10.2 on Jackson. I am going to cut him.
Number six.
Roger Saffold. Now, this is interesting for one reason. Roger Saffold has a $12.3 million cap hit with $4.75 in dead money. So you would save $7.59 on the cap if you cut Roger Saffold. I think an older guy, injury history, maybe you can convince Saffold to take a pay cut, because I'm not sure how many people out there are going to pay top dollar in a $182 million salary cap for an aging injured left guard. Saffold is a very big part of the team. But here's where it becomes interesting, is what else is on the guard market? For example, David DeCastro in Pittsburgh, who has a much worse cap situation than the Titans have, David DeCastro is looking at a $14.3 million cap hit. Let's say the Steelers release David DeCastro. Could you sign David DeCastro for less money than you would owe Saffold, that 7.593? Could you sign David DeCastro for, say, $5 million and save yourself a couple of million against the cap? So that's where it's interesting. That being said, I'm not going to trade. I'm not going to cut Roger Saffold, just simply because if I'm cutting Ben Jones, I can't also cut Roger Saffold, because now I do that and I'm in some real trouble as far as the cap is concerned, or as far as the offensive line is concerned, with LaJuan Kelly, who's also kind of an older injury kind of guy, and Nate Davis. I need to keep a little continuity, so I'm going Saffold over Jones.
Number seven.
Last but not least is Rashawn Evans. And why I bring up Rashawn Evans is because they can't cut him. He's $3.683 million against the cap, so three and change, which isn't bad. A lot of people want to keep Jayon Brown. I don't know what the market will bear on Jayon Brown. I saw a TD had a big contract out there on ESPN, a four-year deal. Now, there's some funny money in that, but I don't know what Jayon Brown is actually worth, but I don't think you can have both on your team. I would look to trade Rashawn Evans, and I know it is sickening to think of the idea of using a first-round draft pick and a fourth-round draft pick on a guy in Evans who so far has had a nice run here or there, but really has not met the hype. But at some point, you got to realize, hey, this is what this guy is. Maybe it's time to move on. He's certainly never going to be a playmaker. He's never going to be the kind of middle linebacker that you hoped he would be. The Dante Hightower, the C.J. Mosley, the other guys that the middle linebackers at Alabama were. He's not good off the edge at rushing the passer. Again, 3.6, you don't think that's a lot of money, but it is with this year's $182 million salary cap. I don't see the Titans picking up the fifth-year option on Rashawn Evans, and I don't see them signing him to a long-term deal unless it's for not a lot of money. So to me, Rashawn Evans, if I can get a third-round pick or better for him, I'm putting him out on the market. Humphreys, Vaccaro, Ben Jones, Adoree Jackson, and Rashawn Evans. I will give you what that all equals on the other side. 615-737-1025, and how that can give you some real money to figure out what you need. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Wonder if you could just talk in general about the challenges that you guys might face, you know, with a salary cap that I guess is reportedly going to shrink, and the fact that you guys are a little bit above the figure, you know, and there's a number of players that, you know, are in need of new contracts.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we're working through that, John. You know, we've got several different models that we've looked at. You know, once the salary cap number is actually given to us, you know, that number, it affects the, you know, the franchise tag numbers. It affects a lot of things. So there's several, like I said, models that we've kind of mocked up based on a couple of different numbers. And we've got some, you know, we've got a little bit of work to do. You know, we're in better shape than some teams are cap wise, and we're not as good as others. But you know, we'll work through it, and at the end of the day, try to do what's best for the team and continue to put a winning product on the field.
Always got to do what's best for the team. That was John Robinson. I have told you that the Titans currently $1.69 million over a $182 million cap. I would cut Adam Humphreys. I would cut Kenny Vaccaro. I would cut Ben Jones. I would cut Adoree Jackson, and I would trade Rashawn Evans. And if you did that, the Tennessee Titans would end up with $26.811 million in salary cap space. I then think that they'll tweak some contracts, you know, kick some money here, move some money there. And I don't know how much money were the contract maintenance they will do. I don't know if they look at it and say, you know what? in 3 years, Henry and Tannehill aren't going to be any good anymore. So let's just kick it all down the road so that when Henry's prime is up, and let's not kid ourselves, Derrick Henry is the Titans. I mean, that he is, he's the guy. If Derrick Henry's not there, you're not there. So maybe you kick it all to that and say, hey, we're going to have to blow it up when Derrick Henry's window closes. Maybe they do more than $5 million, but I'm going to say they, you know, wiggle out $5 million or so and redoing some contracts. So that puts them at about $31.8 million above or underneath the salary cap, which is good. That then gives them time to fill some of their needs. But then their needs get affected because before you make any cuts, the Titans currently need a number two wide receiver, a number one tight end, a number two tight end, a number three tight end, an outside linebacker, an inside linebacker, two defensive linemen. You make these moves, the Titans now need a number two wide receiver. They need a number three wide receiver because we're cutting Adam Humphries. They need a starting or backup safety. If Hooker goes into Vaccaro's spot, then you need a backup safety. So they would need a backup safety. They would need a number one or number two corner. They would need a guy who can start at corner because you're releasing Adoree Jackson. They would need a center because you're releasing Ben Jones. And they would now need, well, they would still need one inside linebacker, but I think they would sign Jayon Brown. So then they'd have him and David Long Jr. And you still need your two defensive linemen. So, I mean, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work with $30 million in cap space, plus you'll have four picks in the first three rounds. Teron Davenport today said on Darren Donick and Chase that he would fill one of those roles, the number one tight end, by using a tool the Titans have at their disposal.
I think there is a good chance. Actually, you're going to see a post, a 32 for 32 on ESPN.com, where it's talking about franchise options for each of the teams. And I actually did say that the Titans will use the tag on Jonnu Smith. And I think it's something that they're going to do to, at the very least, keep him here in 2021. But I think more importantly, it's going to be to give them some flexibility to do some different things to keep him around for a little bit longer. That, in my opinion, is where the tag is going to go. And I mean, when you look at it, it's right around $10 million. I think that's a feasible amount for a tight end of Jonnu Smith's stature. We're talking about a guy who was tied for the fourth most touchdowns by a tight end last year with eight. And that's in addition to his blocking ability and what he brings to the table as far as helping with chips and those type of things last year. That took him out of a lot of pass routes. So I think his numbers could have been even more.
So I like Jonnu Smith just fine. Don't take this as an anti-Jonnu Smith thing or an anti-TD thing. And I mean this as a question. Is Jonnu Smith really worth $10 million? Like, is he really, if Jonnu Smith hits the free agent market, is he going to get $10 million a year? And are you better off, again, $31 million, again, if you make the moves that I would make, are you really okay with making that $21 million with all those holes that you would have to fill, your rookie class you would still have to sign, when there's going to be a lot of tight ends like a Zach Ertz or a Kyle Rudolph from the Vikings that are going to be available? I mean, other teams are in worse cap situation than you, so they're going to have to cut some of these guys. There's going to be some good veteran players that are available. Zach Ertz is supposed to make $8 million. If he gets cut in Philadelphia, could you sign him for five? Five and a half? And isn't he a lot better at five and a half, you would think, than Jonnu Smith is at 10? I know it's easy to look at $31 million after I make these cuts and get excited about it, but you got to totally redo your wide receiver room. You got to get another safety. You got to get a starting center and a starting corner. And you only have, and that's before you have to get all those pass rushers that you haven't been able to get over the last couple of years. So that money, even if you have it, that money is going to go fast. And I would just say prepare yourself for that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. The national hockey media is talking about the Predators having to blow it up, tear it apart, tear it down, who's in, who's out. And I just wonder what that actually means for the Predators and what that means for the players on the team, including Pekka, who I asked about that today. We'll get to that with Chris Mason, who's going to join us next, Preds television analyst. It's right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Speaking of the Predators, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, they are proud supporters of the Nashville Predators, both the Predators and the Vols. And they're also proud supporters of my home because they take great care in support of my home. That's right. I am a Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical client. They were here last week. That's right. They came in the snow and took care of my home. Hiller's offering special February promotion, so you got to call today to schedule. Hiller is offering a great financing deal on HVAC replacements from now until the end of the month. Upgrade your HVAC system and pay no interest for 60 months. They're also offering their $99 HVAC tune-up this month. Regular maintenance helps you avoid costly repairs in the future, and while they're there, they'll give you 50% off all standard repairs. Hiller is taking every precaution possible: social distancing, masks, gloves, and digital payments, so you can feel safe when Hiller is at your home. Trust me, I know. They were here last week. They're fantastic. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Happy you'll be here. The service is free. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
All right, some other things around the league. First of all, the Nashville Predators. They entered the day seventh in points percentage in the Central Division, and there's talk about what they're going to do. Word is maybe only three untouchables. Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and Pekka Rinne, who's towards the end of his career. I think other than that, the Predators are willing to listen on just about anybody. That includes Philip Forsberg. That also includes, I found really interesting, Dante Fabbro.
That is called blowing it up. Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, saying, hey, Roman Josi untouchable. They can't move Roman Josi because he's got a no-movement clause. They're not going to move Pekka Rinne, but I would say this about Pekka. I mean, hey, if they're going to blow the team up, wouldn't you? I think it would be the honorable thing to do to go to him and say, hey, would you like a deal to a team that has the chance of winning a cup where you can go there and play? I think that would be the honorable thing to do, especially given how well he's playing. And Ryan Ellis, we can debate. I think it's a little ridiculous to have him as an untouchable, but that's okay. That's what Elliot Friedman said. That was his reporting. So today, I asked Pekka about that because now it's really starting to pick up steam that this may be a direction the Preds go. This is what Pekka said.
I don't really give a lot of value to that that kind of reporting. I don't know. I really don't know how to answer. As a player, I want us to build off from that win in Columbus. And, obviously the fact is that we got to play better. And it's a short season. Every single game is such a crucial game. And I don't know. I don't know what to answer that. I don't really give too much thought things like that. I think the trade rumors and things like that, they are always present in a pro athlete's life. So, I think it's my strong recommendation to all of us players not to look into that too deeply.
And I appreciate Pekka and his classiness in answering that. And I thought it was very well said. Chris Mason now joins us, Preds TV analyst. Chris, you've been on some bad teams in your career. I mean, put yourself in Pekka's shoes. There's a lot of reporting. Put yourself in the shoes of everybody on that team. There's reporting out there, like the Elliot Friedman clip, that say, hey, they may blow this thing up. You got Pekka saying, hey, I thought we played well Saturday. We got to keep focusing and playing tomorrow against Detroit. How does it actually feel? What is the sentiment like in a locker room in that situation?
I mean, in all honesty, players don't care. Like, it doesn't faze you. It's just, it comes with the territory. It's part of it. You know ahead of time that that's a possibility when things are going the way they are. When you're on a team like that, or you're having a tough season like the Predators are having, and, you look at the situation, well, if that is the situation, I don't know where he got that and whatever, that could be speculation or he heard something or whatever the case may be. But if you're a general manager on a team like that, why wouldn't you listen to offers on players to better your team, to build your future, to restock the cupboards, whatever it may be, to get the right pieces in here that you want moving forward? Having said that, like I said about the players, that it doesn't matter. It's guys are so good at putting all that stuff aside, any issues you might be having at home or any kind of thing outside of the rink, outside the rink. That's one of them. You're aware of it, and you, the bottom line as a player is the only thing that you can control and you know, and that you're focused on at the rink is playing and preparing for the next game and, you know, getting your game in order. So, you know, that if you, you know, you're on a team like that, first of all, that if you don't want to be somewhere, that someone's going to want you on their team. Someone's going to want to add you to a contending team. Or if you want to stay there, you know, you want, like, the guys in that room want this team to be good. So they're focused on playing better so this team can turn it around and make the playoffs. And then once you get there, you never know. Obviously, this is it's a different year, and that this team's in a completely different situation than they have been the last 3 years. So this is a new kind of feel for this group. But having said that, they're not thinking about this at all.
Do you think about it at all in the sense that the way Pekka closed that by saying his advice to the team would be, hey, let's go win these two at Detroit? Because he is right. I mean, if the Preds, and I don't expect this, but let's just say the Preds were to roll off 8 out of 9, that changes the entire discussion surrounding this team.
100%. I mean, they're not thinking about it. And the advice, and he said it too in his media thing, he says this isn't exciting or fancy or whatever, but like, the only thing that they're focused on is winning the first game against Detroit. They're not even thinking about, hey, we got to go to Detroit and win two. We got to win 4 of the next 5. The only thing they're focused on is playing well the next game. That's what you have to do. You can't look past that, especially, you know, when you're in a situation where wins are tough to come by, you know, goals are tough to come by, you know, the whole team's not, you know, everyone's not playing well right now. The only thing they're focused on is playing well that next game against Detroit. That's it. That's it. You know, all this other stuff is, you know, it's fun as a fan, I guess, and everybody, and, you know, around the hockey world to see, you know, different things going on with different teams. And this is another one of those things. Is it true? I have no idea. But as a player, it doesn't even enter the hemisphere as far as I'm concerned.
Chris Mason is our guest. Mace, you've been kind of in similar situations, I think. The one thing I worry about with a total teardown, and, like, I've seen teams that have gone through, like, a half teardown. You know, Boston went to the Cup. They won the Cup in 2011. They went to the Cup in 2013. They were not very good in 2015. They scaled back in 16 and 17, and they're back into the Cup in 2019. They kept that main core together, but then everybody else was kind of gone from those first two Cup runs to the second one. The one thing I worry about a total teardown is, I mean, it's going to be some really ugly hockey if that's what happens. It may pay off in the long run because you may trade a Philip Forsberg and end up with an absolute superstar in return. You may trade Matthias Ekholm, get a pick and two prospects, both prospects pop, and the pick becomes a star, and it becomes one of the best trades ever. We've seen this kind of stuff happen. But the one thing I would say is we are in for some really bad hockey if that is the route that they go. And I think it's easy to say tear it down now without the fans understanding how bad it could get, even if it's just for a year or so.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's just complete speculation. We have no idea. It's, first of all, it's hard enough in this league to make one trade, you know, to get the right pieces, to get the right contracts, to get the right this and that. I understand at the trade deadline, you can move some assets. Sometimes you have to wait the summer. So, I mean, yeah, you could hypothetically, you know, make up a roster and all the trades that are, you know, rumored out there eventually and, you know, compile a roster that you think it would be. But really, like, we have no idea. And whether this is even true or not, you know, obviously everybody knows if, you know, the season continues like this, that's definitely something that's a possibility. But again, I think at this point, everything right now we're talking about is speculation. But again, you know, it could happen. You never say never. But, you know, it's something that, you know, these next, I guess we're coming up. What are we, 8 games, 9 games from halfway through the season? Is that right? Mm-hmm. Almost. Yeah. So whatever we are, we're right around that point. So, you know, it's getting to that time where you have to, you know, this group of players has to start rifling off a couple wins and putting themselves back in a different conversation.
Chris Mason's our guest, Preds TV analyst. They did play well Saturday night at Columbus. They really pumped themselves up for playing well, or thinking that they played well, on Thursday when they lost 3-0, but they really felt good about their game on Saturday. What did you see that was different Saturday than maybe, say, the Saturday before against Detroit?
Oh, my God. It was night and day. Even the game that they played, you know, the game before Columbus, I thought, you know, they did some good things. They were good defensively. They didn't give Columbus much, but they didn't get much in terms of offense. They had, you know, the zone time. but they didn't really get any shots. You know, Merzlikins had a relatively easy night, probably one of the easier shutouts he'll have in his career. But the other night, the second game against Columbus, was this was a team that was the way that they have to play to generate offense. They didn't do anything fancy. They didn't get many odd man rushes, but they worked every single one of them, and they drove to the net. They were all around the net. They ended up, you know, Merzlikins actually got, you know, he hurt his shoulder or whatever, and I guess he's week to week, but they drove, every guy drove the net. They were all around the net. They're putting pucks through. They were getting through, and they just dominated. They just completely outworked Columbus, which is, you know, known as one of the hardest working teams in this league. So I'm sure John Tortorella had some fun, and those players had some fun after that game, because they just got completely dominated in that area. And that's a heavy team. They play a, you know, a really physical brand of hockey, and the Predators, you know, kick their butt, you know, in all areas. So it was night and day. It's one thing to hang on to the puck and to control it and to get in the offensive zone, and maybe you don't spend a lot of time in your zone, but it's another thing to actually generate high-quality scoring chances. And it doesn't have to be breakaways. It doesn't have to be two-on-ones. It can be those greasy, hard area type of goals, which I think the Predators have to get, because, you know, they're not that skilled team. They're not going to go in and win games 5-4, 6-5 and all that. They're going to have to, you know, grind them out 3-2 and get those opportunities and keep going to the net, keep going to the net and get those rebound goals. And so I really like the way that they played, and they were able to generate those chances through their hard work and just, you know, the next level, not just hanging on to the puck, but actually everyone getting to the net and doing those things.
Chris Mason is our guest. Chris, what do you, you've been on some bad teams before. What is kind of the sentiment when you're on a bad team and the players that are on the team have had success and they just can't figure out why they're not having success now?
Well, I've been on some teams that are bad that maybe weren't as skilled and have, you know, those types of players on them. But I'll tell you right now, a team like that is a team that knows it's probably a matter of time before they start doing it. But I think you have to be, you know, realistic. I know everybody was hard on Ryan Johansson. You know, the beginning of the year, he wasn't putting up the, you know, the numbers that you look for a player like that. But you take a player like that out of the lineup, and he makes such a huge difference, you know, to the other guys in the lineup. Victor Arvidsson, prime example. I think, you know, having Ryan Johansson out of the lineup affects him, affects Philip Forsberg. Forsberg didn't seem to slow down, but could have been better. And then it filters down the lineup. So, you know, I look at this team, and you lose Matthias Ekholm again. Well, that puts Dante Fabro in more of a, you know, front and center with him. You know, I don't know. He's been kind of up and down for me this year. I think he's got more, and I think losing Matthias Ekholm really, you know, hurts his game in a way. So they don't have the depth in terms of those types of star players to be able to endure long injuries, I feel, as years before. So when you're losing two of those guys, those are two of your best players. Whether Johansson's putting up numbers, he's not in there winning faceoffs, he's not in there lugging the puck around, making plays, giving guys more space on the ice, same thing with Ekholm, it makes a massive difference. So the only way you're going to win, you know, you're going to have the odd night where you have one of those nights and you put up six goals or whatever, but the only way you win is have to play exactly like they played last game, and that takes a major commitment, and you need every guy to play like that. Otherwise, you can't do it. So it's, you know, hopefully that's one game, right? So we'll see if they follow that up, and if they can continue to play like that, and if that's their identity, and we've heard a lot of talk about that, if that's the way it is, you know, this team can have success.
Chris Mason's our guest. Last thing for you, Chris. I brought this up Friday, because you know how fan anger works. I'm sure you get tweets and all kinds of stuff, and people text you, and
yes,
you know, it's not the same as the person who actually makes the decision. I've said, if I owned the team right now, I wouldn't fire David Poile right now, and I wouldn't fire John Hines. And Terry Crisp came on our show Thursday and kind of got on the soapbox defending Hines, and then did it again on the postgame show with you guys on Fox Sports Tennessee. And I said, look, I've known Crispy long enough that if Crispy didn't believe that, he wouldn't say it. Now, he wouldn't go out of his way to throw anybody under the bus. He wouldn't go on TV or come on this show and say, hey, you know, we got to fire the coach. He wouldn't do that. But he wouldn't go out of his way to kind of get up on the soapbox, you know, that, hey, everybody else be quiet. Give me a second to talk about this. And for some reason, that matters to me. Like, that stands out to me in defense of John Hines. I don't love everything John Hines does, but that does stand out to me. How unfair do you think the criticism of Hines is given the circumstances?
Oh my God. I personally love John Hines, and you know, I guess the winning is the cure for everything. When you're winning, everything's good in the world. When you're losing and when your team, you know, hasn't played to what everybody expects, it, you know, obviously fans are going to get the first person they look at is the coach. But to me, if you look at what game plans are supposed to be, how they're supposed to be executed, the things that he's saying, the way that he wants this team to play, I'm completely in line with that. I think this is exactly how this team has to play in order to be successful. So to me, it always falls on the shoulders of the players. It's whether they perform, whether they go out, they're given a game plan, they're expected to go out and do it. At the end of the day, you got to play hockey and you got to play well, whatever the system may be. It's not the coach. These guys are self-motivated. They're professional athletes. You're not going to go to the rink and say, oh man, the coach is being like this, I'm not going to play hard today. It just doesn't work like that. These guys, it doesn't matter if you absolutely hate the coach. I'm not saying, because I know these guys love John Hines, but it to me, it falls on the player's shoulders, and it always does. I've been on a team that the coach got fired, and you know, it wasn't him. Some guys didn't like him. Some guys, it's just the way it goes, you know, with a coach and players. But John Hines is a well-liked coach and respected guy in that locker room. I know that for a fact. So I don't know. It's just, I guess sports is, that's just the easy one to pick. Well, they're not doing good because of this, you know, because of the coach. It's just not the case. So, and I do get a lot of those tweets and all that. And I just, you know, I shrug them off. I know fans are emotional and they want to see this team win, but you also have to be realistic about these situations. So and when Crispy does, exactly. He's not going to throw anyone under the bus for sure, but if he feels strongly about something in support of it, he's definitely going to speak his mind. So I always listen to Crispy. He's a wise man.
There's something to that. Chris Mason. Chris, we'll see you tomorrow night on the TV call against Detroit. I think they got to sweep both games, but I've been saying that for a long time, so who knows. Appreciate you, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Jared. Take care, bud.
Yep, Chris Mason. See him on the TV broadcast tomorrow, as always. 615-737-1025. I promise this is not a political take. It's not. But I think it's something the NFL is, I guess, starting to talk about. I woke up this morning, I saw this headline, and I just have a thought on it I want to get to. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. By the way, the Predators. Every weekday that there is a Preds game, like, I don't know, tomorrow, you've got the opportunity to win on Robbie and Rex Road. So tune in to Robbie and Rex Road every weekday morning at 8:45 when the Predators have a game this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. And, of course, tomorrow, 8:45 is your opportunity to win there. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN. We'll do another game. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Preds insiders coming up tonight. Then they go to Detroit. So I saw a headline, and this is not a political take. I am not in the business of going on political takes on this. I am not publicly a political person because, well, it just angers a bunch of people. And if you already feel a certain way about something, you're not going to feel the way I feel in the same way. So I saw a headline this morning, ProFootballTalk.com, where it talked about optimism grows for full NFL stadiums in 2021. Quote, as the nation begins to make real progress when it comes to beating back the pandemic, the National Football League has a growing sense of optimism that stadiums will be full during the 2021 season. From the availability of vaccines to signs of potential herd immunity, some believe that by Memorial Day, the tide will have turned dramatically. Then by Labor Day, the question becomes whether pro football will be able to pack its venues. Many factors, Pro Football Talk writes, it will influence the ultimate reality. First, people need to welcome the opportunity to be vaccinated against the virus. As more and more people are getting into it, tales of serious reactions or other complications are becoming extremely rare. Second, political winds need to change in states where extreme caution has been the prevailing view since last March. I am not a doctor. I am not a politician, and I am not privy to any information that you are not. But I just have decided, with having watched how the virus interacts, how people react to it, how it works, having had the virus, etc. And I take the virus very, very seriously. You know, I when I got it, I thought to myself, you know, dang it. I had tried so hard to not get it, and then I still got it. But I think we're getting to the point now with football season, even with baseball season coming up. Like, I think it's time to put the fans back in the stands. First of all, I've noticed that the spikes, the relative spikes in the virus, are more so traveling from one place to another. Florida opens up, Georgia opens up, everywhere else in the South is pretty much closed, everywhere in the North is closed, everybody comes down to Florida and Georgia and it spikes. Thanksgiving and Christmas, people go home to spend time with their relatives, the virus spikes. What I have also noticed is when it's an outdoor thing, it seems to me that there are maybe a lot less moments that you can point to a virus and say, see, there's a giant community spike because of this big community moment. In the summer, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, and I remember Dr. Fauci on TV begging with people to wear a mask. But it doesn't seem like there were any virus spikes from that. President Trump had a bunch of rallies, in November. And while I'm not sure a ton of those people wore masks, it doesn't seem as if there were any noticeable spikes you could point to, you know, thinking big picture here in some of these communities. So I have to ask the question, if football is for the most part outdoors and baseball is for the most part outdoors, should we not just kind of bring it back? Should we not kind of say, you know what, let's have some fans in the stands? Because there are a lot of people that I understand the indoor sports, the basketballs, the hockeys, I understand that. There's a lot of people that are losing out on a lot of money. And I'm not just talking about the owners or the players, but I'm talking about the people that run the parking lots. I'm talking about the people that work at the concession stands in some of these events. And again, I take the virus very, very seriously. And when I see stupid things, I point to it and I say, that's stupid. And yet I don't feel like having stadium, maybe not full, but 80% capacity or something for a football game, I don't see that much harm in that. That's just my opinion. Pecorine, I want to give mad props to him. Today I asked the Predators if, before they flew to Dallas, if we could speak to somebody within their leadership group, knowing that there was the big Elliott Friedman report. Now, I did not tell the Preds that it was about the Elliott Friedman report, but it was, and I asked Pecorine about it today. Here's what he said.
Yeah, Pekka, it was reported by Elliott Friedman of Sportsnet that the team is considering selling off pieces. You're one of the three untouchables, according to his report, along with Roman and Ryan. How does the idea of the team deciding to sell ahead of the trade deadline make you feel?
I don't really give a lot of value to that that kind of reporting. I don't know. I really don't know how to answer. As a player, I want us to build off from that win in Columbus, and obviously the fact is that we got to play better, and it's a short season. Every single game is such a crucial game, and I don't know. I don't know what to answer that. I don't really give too much thought things like that. I think the trade rumors and things like that, they are always present as in a pro athlete's life. So, I think it's my strong recommendation to all of us players, not to look into that too deeply.
Coming up next, Preds Insiders. They'll have all the latest. Stillman and Company. We're back tomorrow at 2:00. We'll see you then.